are going to talk with the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster, Faster. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July 5th. Hope you had a lovely holiday weekend. We are going to talk about how our lives are getting faster and faster, from speed dating to instant messaging and more, and how this is affecting our way of life, and how it's even affecting our brains. And we'll hear from our guests that this is not necessarily a bad thing. And we will welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What concerns do you have about our fast-paced world? Do you welcome the faster pace of the world, or do you wish that our society would return to a slower pace? Why or why not? Are you doing anything to embrace this faster world? Let us know as we talk with Robert Colville. He's a regular commentator on politics, culture, and technology. He has been UK news director at BuzzFeed, the head of comment at the Daily Telegraph. He has a master's in international relations from Cambridge and is the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster, Faster. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So what do you mean exactly by The Great Acceleration?
Well, that's the thing we've all noticed, that our lives seem to be speeding up, that changes in technology seem to be happening more and more quickly, new disruptive business models are being introduced, and more broadly that we never seem to have enough time in the day, that we all sort of feel that we're hurrying and scurrying about our daily lives.
When did this start?
Well, it kind of started with the steam engine. I mean, so this isn't a new phenomenon. You can look back over the last 200 years and find people constantly complaining about the speed of life. There's all sorts of reasons this happens. One of the which I talk about at the start of my book is there are more of us living together. The pace of our life scales up according to the community we live in. So even in the 19th century, people were saying, a New Yorker will walk as though he has a good dinner in front of him and a policeman behind him. The more we've moved into cities, the more we've become an urban species, the more the pace of our lives has speeded up. A scientist from California called Robert Levine did an experiment where he went to 30 different cities around the world and timed how long it took people to walk down a certain stretch of pavement. And what they found was that the larger and wealthier the city, the quicker people moved. But the thing which interested me, and which was the sort of springboard for the book, was that 10 years later, some British scientists went back and did the same thing, and they found that people were walking faster. That they that even in the same places, people were actually sort of marching through the streets more quickly.
I should explain why that is.
I think it's just the pressure of life, the kind of the especially the impact of technology. We're being pushed is the wrong word, but we're being inundated with information, with opportunities, with decisions. The internet are sort of absolutely designed to offer us a sort of cascade of choice and sensation and emotion that we really like, and similarly in our working lives. It used to be that you sort of go into the office at 8 or 9 in the morning, and you come out at 5 or 6 or 7 at night, and that would be it. And now we're all carrying around phones, which tether us to the office, which kind of keep us on the treadmill. So there's a sort of push pull thing. On the one hand, we're being sort of pushed by technology and by the demands of the workplace, but on the other hand, we're being pulled by our own appetite. Whenever we're given the choice between going slower and faster as a species and as individuals, we always choose to go faster.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about that because there are certain things that bother me about the fast pace of life, but I personally like novelty. I like going from one thing to another. I like I like, you know, moving forward. And so there's a, you say we like this for the most part.
Yeah, we sort of don't realize how much we like it until you sort of ask people, you know, can you give up your phone for a day or an hour, even an hour? You know, can you, you know, do you want to go back to a slower pace of life? So they tried this back in, you know, back in 2003. This was before they had iPhones and apps and status notifications. They said to people, you know, do you want to give up your phone for 3 days, just for 72 hours? And only 3 out of the 220 people they asked to do it could make it through. You know, it's just such a, it's such an intrinsic part of our lives.
What kind of impact is this having on our lives? Is this acceleration having on our lives?
Well, so there's, I mean, this is where you get into some of the sort of big arguments and some of the, you know, huge debates, which I think are going to be really important. You know, there is a school of thought that this is sort of purely a bad thing, that we're becoming sort of more frantic, we're, you know, like kind of hummingbirds. We flip from thought to thought, we can't focus, we can't concentrate, we're just sort of running faster and faster to keep up. And there's another school of thought, which I kind of tend more towards, which is that actually, you know, the evidence shows that, you know, the faster our pace of life, the healthier we are, the more productive, the more, you know, the more ideas we generate, the more, you know, it's that, you know, this is kind of why cities are more prosperous places, because people are sort of bouncing into each other, creating and coming up with new ideas. And, you know, obviously there's a massive task in terms of, you know, developing tools in terms of willpower and self-control, and the ability to put down our phones during meals and switch them off at night before we go to sleep. And, you know, all of this is a sort of huge area which I'm sure your listeners will have many, many thoughts on. But I don't think we're racing to our own destruction in quite the way that that some of the more skeptical accounts would have it.
You write in the introduction that not only is this acceleration a good thing, it is something we have actively chosen, and we'll break that down a bit. First, why is it a good thing?
Well, as I said, a faster pace of life is, you know, is correlated with greater happiness, with greater wealth. You know, it's what we, you know, it's. It increases the size of the economy, but it also, you know, it also makes us, it gives us more choice and more options. And the danger is that what quite a lot of people worry about is that this shades into addiction, that we become dependent on the devices. And but the evidence seems to be that, you know, people are still as sort of happy and stable and healthy as they've ever been. You know, some people do sort of suffer from the internet. You know, they do suffer, you know, online gambling, or, you know, they do become sort of, they do develop problematic behaviors. But they seem to be the kind of people who would have developed problematic behaviors without the internet. You know, they've got something wrong at home, or, you know, they're suffering from depression or what have you. And, you know, so the kind of technology, it sort of exacerbates the problem, but it doesn't actually cause it.
And while we have more choice, what are the other benefits of the great acceleration?
It gives us more stuff, you know, more options to choose from. But also, it seems to be delivering. And this is sort of moving away slightly from the working life stuff. It seems to be delivering us sort of better quality things. What I found is that we're not. When I was researching this, and I was quite reassured by it, we're not sort of just. It's not just that everything's getting faster and shorter and snappier. What seems to be happening is a polarization between immediate and immersive. So, you know, you get, you know, very, very sort of short-term, quick-hit experiences or sort of products or phenomena, things like Twitter or, you know, sort of 3-minute pop songs or what have you. But then you also seem to get, I'm a journalist, and we have sort of really good data on what people are reading. And it turns out that the pieces these days that do really, really well are the very, very short ones, which just say, this thing has happened, or here's what to think about it, or here's a cool graph, or, you know, something which is just a kind of a bite of information. Or also, the really long pieces, the sort of New Yorker-style essays, the sort of 3,000-word investigations, where where you can just kind of sink into it and go through it. And what's falling away is the stuff in the middle, the kind of the sort of the story which just says this thing happened yesterday, and you know, here's what some people have said about it. And you know, likewise, in terms of books, I mean, everyone thought the internet was going to destroy reading, and actually, you know, books on the New York Times bestseller list are getting longer. You know, people are making time to sort of watch Game of Thrones, or to kind of to yoga or massage, or kind of these sort of quite slow paced sort of nourishing experiences, alongside the sort of bite sized fast food.
We are talking about the pros, and we will talk about some of the cons of the great acceleration, how the world is getting faster, with our guest, Robert Colville. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Our lives have all become increasingly fast-paced and show no signs of slowing down. We are talking with our guest author about this rapid evolution and how this is affecting our relationships, our news, our politics, and even our brains. Our guest is Robert Colville. He is the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster. So how is your life getting faster? And do you appreciate this? Or do you wish that your life and our society would return to a slower pace? Why or why not? And let me pose the question that was posed to some in a survey we discussed in our first segment. Would you be willing to give up your mobile phone? Would you be willing to give up the constant notifications and instant access to your work email or to Facebook or to social media? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let us know how this acceleration is affecting you. Is it for the better or the worse? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Robert, when I forget my phone at home now, maybe it's charging or something, I don't know how I can forget it, but I really do, it's almost like you go through, you don't feel properly prepared to face the day. You feel almost, start getting the jitters and withdrawal. Am I alone in that?
No, I think, there's even the sort of phantom ring syndrome. You know, we're all, yeah, it feels like we almost sort of treat the phone as part of us these days. It's so important to our, because I think, you know, the reason all this happens, and, you know, so the reason that we all walk at the same pace is because we're social creatures. We want to, you know, we want to communicate with other people. We want to know what they're up to, and we want to have sort of evidence that they're thinking of us, which is kind of what your email account is, really. It's a sort of, you know, you were talking about the brain's reward system, and that's exactly what this is. You know, every single time you get a little, you get a sort of notification that you've got an email, a little, you know, a little light goes up in your brain, and you get a little dopamine hit, and you also get the social validation, that someone is, you know, you get the new information, but you also get the fact that someone is thinking about you.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember this happening with my dumb phone, but I do with my smartphone. So something's actually happened to my brain since I got a smartphone?
Yeah, I think so. It's conditioned you, if you like, to accept the stimulation. I mean, there was a fantastic and really disturbing piece of research they did where they asked people to sit in a room for just 15 minutes alone with their thoughts. And, you know, for quite a lot of people, they rated it as an unpleasant experience because there was no stimulation. I mean, in fact, they re-ran the experiment and gave people a chance to give themselves an electric shock to break up the monotony of it. And there's this weird thing where a quarter of the women do it and two-thirds of the men.
We'll give ourselves an electric shock to break the boredom? Oh, my goodness. This can't be all good, though. I mean, that's and to be constantly wired and flitting from this to that and checking this and that and walking faster to this place and that place. Is this all good?
No, I mean, no, it's not. I mean, so one area that I'm especially concerned about is politics. I mean, in the news break just now, you had a story about the car crash that my country has become. You know, I'm standing in London talking to you, and it's astonishing. You know, the entire political system seems to have collapsed over the past week.
Yeah? How is that related to the Great Acceleration?
So, in several ways. I mean, partly it's. I mean, and it's the same thing you sort of see with Donald Trump. That partly it's a sort of the media is the media has speeded up. You know, we've moved from a thing where we have one story a day to just endless stories bouncing around on Twitter, and that kind of there's a sort of frenetic quality then to public debate, and it makes it really hard to be in government because you've got people sort of constantly bombarding you with demands to comment on this or that story or what have you. But you also have a sort of deeper thing, which is one of the things that everyone kind of accepts is happening is that the economy is polarizing. That the people who benefit from acceleration, the people who benefit from technology, the fast charging executive types, they're doing great. But there are also people who've been left behind, people whose jobs have been displaced by computer, or who are doing, sort of low-paid, low-value work. You know, there are people for whom there are never enough. There's not enough work to go around, and then there are people for whom there's never enough hours in a day. So that obviously sort of breeds tremendous resentment and sort of a desire to give the established elites a good kicking.
We are talking with Robert Colville. He is the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster, Faster. We're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own experiences, your views on this. Is this a good or a bad thing, in your opinion? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What do you see as the positive or the negative effects of our world getting faster and faster? Rich emails, there's something to be said for just sitting. Among the intergenerational conflicts we experience over the 4th of July weekend in the U.S., where ones during which the old folks simply want to sit, sip, and converse, but the young'uns, the grandchildren, would have virtually none of it. Rich gave this example. When discussing what to eat for the evening meal, the kids wanted to know where we could go. The older folks were saying that no one needed to go anywhere because we had plenty of food, either mostly prepared or ready for easy preparation. It does seem to me that there are downsides to this great acceleration. It seems we are losing something. How about intergenerational conflict over this, Robert?
Yeah, completely. So I'm 35, and my father was 64 when I was born. He was a really, really elderly parent. So we had a massively magnified version of this. You know, I'd sort of complained to him about his, that he couldn't remember how to set the video to record, and he'd be like, well, for me, a telephone is a recent invention, which was obviously a slight exaggeration, but he was, I think there was. There's a clash in terms of how people use technology, and a clash, as Rich says, in terms of attitude. That this is one of the interesting things, which is why we sort of worry that our kids aren't okay and are going off the rails, is because we can't see what technology they're using. In the old days, if you wanted to know what your teenage daughter was up to, you could just sort of, pick up the phone and listen in on her phone calls. Now, if she, she might not be using Facebook, she'd be using Snapchat or WhatsApp or messaging services that you don't even know exist, let alone that you can monitor. So, I think there's a real. This is one of the worries about this, that these tendencies sort of pull people apart and lead to everyone leading their own life as opposed to having sort of shared values and shared experiences to come together around. And I think families are a great example of this. Just you know, that losing, I mean, that it would be terrible if we lost that ability just to sit around as, you know, three generations of a family in front of a home-cooked meal.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's coincidentally, yesterday at our 4th of July cookout at my sister's house, a great nephew showed me how to use Snapchat, and I'm now signed up on Snapchat, and so that that became our, you know, one of our things to do, and I and we actually did have a lot of fun, you know, sharing ridiculous photos. But the thing that I couldn't quite get my arms around yet is the temporary nature of this. This is, you know, you can set this photo to last for a maximum of 10 seconds, and then, you know, you can save it, yes. But, I mean, for the most part, it's just this brief, snappy, you know, just send a quick photo to somebody, and then it's gone, poof. And I thought, what's the deal with that?
Well, I suppose the counter argument to that would be that for most of human history, you know, all of our interaction was ephemeral. We were just talking to each other or sent, you know, maybe sending each other letters. I mean, in an odd way, Snapchat's actually a reaction to technology the fact that Facebook was keeping everyone's photos forever, and so, you know, you faced the prospect that you were going for a job interview and they'd be able to see a picture of you, you know, as an 18-year-old, you know, drinking beer with a silly wig on, and you wouldn't get the job.
So Facebook is, how then is Facebook faring in regards to the Great Acceleration?
Well, I think Facebook's incredibly... So Facebook, I mean, one of its real accomplishments was to absolutely get the switch to mobile. So their mission, their mantra has always been that they have to make themselves faster because that's what their users demand. You know, Mark Zuckerberg was absolutely religious about this, but when Facebook was starting, you know, he wanted to get the pages in front of the users as quickly as possible because, you know, the slightest delay would cause them to be, you know, would cause them to go elsewhere. And similarly, you know, it's all about increasing the volume of interaction. I mean, Facebook keeps on changing its newsfeed in response to what its data tells it its customers want. It's this kind of constant arms race to try to capture as much of our attention as it possibly can.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about how and you did, but I'm getting, and I know a lot of other people are getting, most of their news on a social media site or on the internet, and not you know, the old fashioned way where even, you know, you're not waiting for that newspaper to show up at the doorstep. How is the Great Acceleration affecting our news, our media in general, our news consumption?
Yeah. Again, you see the polarization I talked about earlier between fast and slow. So stories are becoming... So in the old days, you know, there was a thing called a newspaper which bundled together, you know, foreign news, home news, crossword, weather, TV. You know, it had kind of a pretty much sports, you know, a pretty much a good enough thing of everything that you might need that day. And that's kind of broken down. What we experience now, especially via social media, is individual stories. So, which has kind of broken the power of newspapers in quite a big way, and has destroyed their economic model as well. So, in terms of what the stories that come through, again, you get these kind of incredibly fast, snappy, attention-grabbing things, which are, you know, John Oliver just destroyed Donald Trump, or Donald Trump just destroyed Hillary Clinton. You know, things which are. Or a quiz on, you know, what Harry Potter house are you? You know, all these things which are sort of trying to grab your attention as much as possible. But you also see a real sort of surge in kind of those longer, more considered pieces, which you can sort of sink into. But I think one of the problems, and this is, you know, everyone's kind of aware of this, is what they call the filter bubble. It's the idea that if Facebook is serving you stuff that it knows you will like, then you won't experience stuff that someone, you know, down the street in another neighborhood from another social class might like. So, for example, after the Brexit vote in the UK, I and others were kind of looking down our Facebook feeds, and every single person in it was going, oh, my God, this is awful. How could the country do this? We should have stayed in the European Union. But, you know, 52% of the country had voted to leave. yet we were, in terms of what we were seeing and what we were saying to each other, we were completely divorced from that half of the country, and they were completely divorced from us.
Yeah. What do you make of the story, though, that right around at the when the votes were being counted, a bunch of people were asking, "What is Brexit?" And
I think it was H.L. Mencken that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public, and I think you could probably add the British public to that. I mean, there were an awful lot of 30% of people in the country didn't even bother to vote, so. So maybe they were the ones doing the searching.
Let's go to Dwayne in Weston now. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
This reminds me of an old Mayberry show where a big city businessman was driving through and his car broke down, and Andy knew this guy needed a break from his fast-paced life, and he was putting down Mayberry how slow it was. And so they purposely delayed getting his car fixed, ended up spending 3 or 4 days, and at the end, he said it was the best thing he ever needed. And, I agree. Fast paced is great, but it was just a good example of a guy from big city, hectic life, stopping in a small town and winding down for a bit.
Yeah. Is this mainly happening, number one, in the big cities and not the small towns, Robert?
I think it is, yeah. And just because, because of that dynamic I mentioned earlier, that, the more people you have, the faster things go. And you also get a sort of sorting effect where people who like that kind of lifestyle would tend to migrate to the cities, and people who don't would tend to move out. But equally, I think that's a really good example of the way we all need space and time to we can't just go at top speed all the time. Everyone needs time to relax, and time to go. I've just come back from 2 weeks holiday in the countryside, and I could sort of feel myself slowing down. I could feel the tension sort of easing out of my shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that saying for a very long time. You've got to stop and smell the roses. So this is not
but you also need to do that in your daily life. I mean, there are all these sort of things which we now know, like. I talked about I mentioned massage or yoga before, but things like sort of mindfulness or meditation, just taking a few seconds in the middle of your day to sort of stop and do some deep breaths and to center yourself and focus yourself, really, really does work wonders.
Yeah. So we should do that. We should take some steps like a meditation to intentionally slow down in the great acceleration.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's to have the best, the best of the fast and the best of the slow. It's when we sort of just, it's when we lose self-control. It's when we become mindless that the sort of bad effects start to happen. It's when we're so consumed by time pressure that we just don't have time for anything else. And the moment you sort of actually sort of raise your head a bit and stop and take a breath, suddenly everything becomes a bit more bearable.
Elizabeth emails, I mostly enjoy owning a dumb phone because when I'm on the bus, I can knit, I can read, or just be with my thoughts rather than checking Facebook or email once every 5 or 10 seconds. So maybe that's for some people, Robert?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we're going to see over the next few years is increasing use of sort of technology to tame technology, as it were. So things which filter out your emails and notes. I mean, this was what actually, when Apple launched the Apple Watch, one of their justifications for it was that the iPhone was just bothering you too much, that there were too many notifications streaming, it was buzzing too much and you were getting too distracted by it. So the thinking was that there would be this thing on your wrist that would filter some of the noise. Programs that prevent you from sending emails after a certain time at night, or that keep on blipping up and reminding you, look, it's time to go to sleep now, or you should probably take a break and go outside and or get some exercise, which is an absolutely brilliant sort of cure for stress and tiredness.
We will talk a little bit more about how the Great Acceleration is affecting our sleep health and other aspects of our lives when we come back from news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Robert Colville, regular commentator on politics, culture, and technology, the UK news director at BuzzFeed, head of comment at the Daily Telegraph.
I'm in the fast lane.
We are talking about life in the fast lane and how our lives are becoming faster and faster. Talking about some of the negative effects, but our guest says that there are positive effects too, that it's a largely a good thing. So we'll talk more about how we can benefit from a fast pace of life and how we can maybe block out some of the negative effects. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences. What effects have you noticed of our faster-paced life? Is it affecting you in particular? Maybe your social life, your relationships, maybe your sleep, maybe your work performance. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you have any concerns about our fast-paced world, and are you doing anything to either embrace it or try to slow it down? Our guest is Robert Koval. He is the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster, Faster. And I did want, you touched on it just before our news break. I know I am guilty of this. I'm looking at the internet, I'm looking at my screen, just before going to bed, and I have a very early bedtime, and it does disrupt my sleep. I can't fall asleep when I do that, Robert. So this is affecting my brain that way too, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the obvious reasons for that is that it's about wavelengths of light. That the your phone, you know, the screens that we mostly use, you know, phones, iPads, laptops, they emit a wavelength of light, that a sort of blue light, which keeps us awake and alert. And so, so that's absolutely the worst thing you should be doing before you're trying to go to bed. But there is a larger problem, which I do talk about in the book, that because of the sort of demands of work and of family life, our sleep tends to be the thing that suffers. We sort of tend to either cannibalize it or to sort of dilute its quality because we're so stressed, and that has all sorts of implications, which are not very good. I mean, sleep and stress between them have been linked to all sorts of, bad things happening to you later in life.
Yeah, they're also calling sleep deprivation like the new drunk driving too.
Yeah, I mean, so there are studies I talk about where they monitored doctors who were on 24-hour shifts. Overnight, and they were because we're not fully asleep or fully awake. Sometimes parts of our brains go to sleep, and they found that parts of these guys' brains were going to sleep during operations or when they were talking to patients. And pretty much every sort of disaster, like Chernobyl or the Exxon Valdez, if you sort of go back, you find someone who was incredibly sleep deprived was making critical, or many people who are incredibly sleep deprived were making the critical decisions.
So what should we do to negate the Great Acceleration's effect on our sleep health?
So I think there's a few things we can do. I mean, one of them is to sort of set curfews, to set rules on media consumption in your house, to make sure that you're not reading a screen in the last sort of hour or so before bed. With kids, I talk in the book about this amazing this school in the UK where they, because teenagers need more sleep than the rest of us. They're kind of biologically programmed that way. So what they did was just to push back the start of the school day by an hour. And the grades absolutely shot up. These kids went from below the national average to above it.
So we didn't really talk in great depth about how the Great Acceleration is affecting our workplaces. What's happening?
Yeah, so the obvious thing is that we're doing more, that, the demands on us are, that the hours we're putting in, especially in America, actually, the hours we're putting in are going up. But there's also a phenomenon that, we're also more distracted because we've got all these notifications flicking in at us, in terms of email or websites we're following. Our train of thought is constantly being derailed. So one of the reasons I'm optimistic about the sort of path this is taking is that we now have much better evidence about what technology is doing to us and what we can do to cope with that. And so one of the things we now know is that multitasking basically doesn't exist, that every time you switch your attention from one thing to another, you take a cognitive hit. So What quite a lot of businesses are doing now is, you know, is scheduling what's called maker time. You know, like say 2 hours in the middle of a day where everyone knows that you're not going to go to meetings, you're not going to check your emails. This is just your time to get your head down and absolutely work on the thing that you need to work on. And similarly, you know, another sort of solution is to pay attention to your biological clock. We all have sort of different patterns of alertness and sort of enthusiasm throughout the day. I always find that sort of from about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I just kind of become a zombie, especially if I've had a big lunch. So that's not a time of day that I should be trying to do really creative, really high value work. It's a time of day I should be, you know, checking my expenses forms or just doing some filing.
Yeah, and how have our social lives changed thanks to faster lifestyles?
Well, I mean, dating is a really good example. We moved from a situation where where dating was a kind of slow motion thing that you'd be going out and trying to meet people or, you know, sending letters or, you know, and then we sort of moved on to websites where, you know, theoretically we had this massive pool of people we could meet. But even then it was still quite awkward and quite cumbersome. We'd spend, you know, hours making sure we had exactly the right profile picture and exactly the right witty message about ourselves, and then trying to find exactly the right person. And even then, you know, when we meet them, we could sort of put hours into planning for that meeting. And if we didn't, you know, the only thing which can really predict whether you'll get on with someone is actually meeting them. And so you go out and meet these people for coffee, and then, you know, then it would be a meal. It would be glaringly apparent that you didn't have anything in common. So now we've got things have speeded up again, and we've got some apps like Tinder, and where you can just sort of enmesh dating into your daily life. You can sort of look on the app and see who's around you and see who might be interested in a date or, you know, something more, depending on what you're after. And I think, yeah, and so that's a really good example of the way things have speeded up.
So how can we disrupt the great acceleration or stop it?
I personally don't think so. I mean, I think we can sort of focus on getting the benefits rather than the costs. But this process is kind of remorseless. I mean, technology is getting faster. You know, the devices we have around us are getting more powerful and becoming more and more a part of our lives. And as, you know, things like the internet, it's going to kind of move from our phones to pretty much everything we own is going to be sort of hooked up to the web. You know, our homes are going to become smart homes. But, you know, so we're going to be surrounded constantly by technology and by information. And, you know, but above all, you know, we are these social creatures who want to be in touch with other people. You know, it's going to be, I don't think you can see this kind of going into reverse, because it feeds so many of our most intrinsic appetites. And the question is whether, you know, whether we can master those appetites or whether we become mastered by them.
Yeah. You know, just about everybody we've heard from on the show so far thinks that this is a bad thing, and that this is that they're not necessarily benefiting from it. What's your assessment? I mean, there are negatives, but do you think overall it's a good thing?
Yeah, I think overall it is a good thing. And so the reason I'm encouraged is that, you know, ever since the world first started to speed up, people have been complaining about it. They've been saying this is going to sort of send us to hell in a handcart. And it's never really happened. We've always sort of ended up profiting much more than we've lost. And one of the sort of interesting things about human beings is we're biased to be pessimistic. We're biased to be risk averse and loss averse. We, you know, to see that, you know, to focus on things that might threaten us, which, you know, kind of makes evolutionary sense. That idea that, if we see a kind of a loud noise or a, if we see a loud noise, if we hear a loud noise or, you know, see something new, it might be something frightening. It might be like a saber-toothed tiger lurking in the bushes. So that's, you know, so there's, you know, there was a great experiment they did where they wrote the same, they took the same book review, and in one version of it, they made all the adjectives positive. And in the other one, they made all the adjectives negative. And people thought that the negative book review was more intelligent because it kind of conformed to this pessimism bias. So my sort of, my hunch and my hope is that, you know, that this is going to be the same thing, that we're going to sort of all be complaining about what we've lost without seeing what we've gained.
Yeah. So what steps can we take to embrace the great acceleration?
I think, I mean, as I sort of alluded to earlier, I think self-control is really important. You know, to make sure that you're, you know, that you're able to combine fast and slow, that you kind of you've got the speed at your fingertips, but then also that you'll take you can still take the time out. You know, that you're, you know, that you're not that you're kind of having good, you know, sort of good, exciting and exhilarating lifestyle, rather than the one which is sort of stressful and fretful, where you're always sort of hurrying to catch up. But I think, in terms of pop culture, you know, there's more good stuff being produced now than ever before. There's more great TV shows, there's more great music, there's more great books, you know, out there for people to, you know, we have an access to sort of pretty much an infinite variety of content, and that can be really sort of scary and frightening, but it's a sort of wonderful opportunity as well.
Yeah, and in our final minute, you can, what does an accelerated future look like?
Well, it looks, you know, the definition of it is that it's, because things are changing faster, it looks like something none of us can predict. I think, for me, one of the more interesting things is that we're reaching the limits in terms of communications technology, in terms of information. You know, it's pretty much moving as fast as it can. But there are all sorts of other areas like materials or genetics, where the same kind of computing power is starting to be applied. So I think we could see this. Yeah, I think we could see some pretty exciting things in those fields as well.
Well, thank you for slowing down and spending an hour with us today. Robert Colville is the author of The Great Acceleration, How the World is Getting Faster, Faster. He is also a regular commentator on politics, culture, and technology. He has been UK News Director at BuzzFeed and the head of comment at the Daily Telegraph. Thanks to Brianne Chasso and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing this program. Thank you for listening. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up next, a new report shows that despite a $2,000 reduction in base pay, the claims that Act 10 would have dire consequences for teachers in Wisconsin proved to be greatly exaggerated. We will talk with a guest about the findings of that study coming up after the news. Then after 7:30, we will talk with a guest lawmaker who says Governor Walker is out of touch when it comes to comparing teachers' pay with NFL free agency. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.